And good evening. Good evening. Good evening. Well, guys, I hope your toes are warmer than my toes. For some reason, the cold has seeped through my shoes. It's freezing. I have lost all feeling in my toes right now. But that is the throes of the day. That is the flows of the day. And I hope wherever you find yourself, that you're in the company and ready and listening here to the Business and Economic Zone, here in your number one talk radio station of Eagle FM. Now, we find ourselves, guys, in a pretty interesting discussion, because where I left off on Friday evening, in terms of the urbanization discussions, Friday evening also the how rural areas or rural communities can benefit because of their proximities to the urbanizations that are expected and forecasted to take place on the continent, we now bounce over into a discussion that we had on our Friday evening edition of the Villager e-paper. For those of you who did read it, it's the story with regards to Namibia's or the Namfisa Agri Index that is set to gain traction because of the World Bank with their technical team that visited, that was set to visit the country. Now, just to give you the gist, just to give the lowdown with regards to that discussion point, well, a four-member delegation from the World Bank coming to Namibia is to provide their technical support or throw their technical support on a first-ever agri-index insurance plan or insurance platform for the country. This is all coordinated by NAMFISA, the Namibia Financial Institutions Regulator. I keep forgetting what NAMFISA's full name stands for, but I constantly end at the FI, the financial institutions, sorry. Now, let's understand this whole objective, right? This whole objective is in order for the World Bank guys on to assist our governmental stakeholders, remember that, on design and implementation of this index-based agricultural insurance program targeting small-scale farmers, especially in rural and communal areas. The assistance will be based upon the understanding of the areas and the cost of major disasters, and public sector support to mitigate the impact of these disasters. Secondly, to identify the data and other infrastructure investment required to support an effective program. And lastly, understanding how to effectively work with the private sector, learning from past pilots in Namibia. Now, right there, it's a novel and it's a great idea. It's a novel and it's a great idea. Now, you're going to ask me, Dwight, what is this thing, this agri-index? What is it? Well. Agri-index, in its basic form for you to understand, agricultural index insurance bases payouts on an easy-to-measure index of factors, such as rainfall or average yields that predict individual losses. So, for example, it's based upon, well, what the rainfall would have been or what the average yield would have been for a specific harvest period. And it will be then, you know, to see what the individual losses are or the losses are of said agricultural proponents, being the farmers or the crop yielders or the crop harvesters, you know, whoever. Because I can't call someone who only has a small, you know, sort of like a garden, vegetable garden in their backyard, an agricultural farmer. I can only call them a producer. I can only use the word producer. So let's rather be safe and stick to the word producer. Because it is all about small scale. But small scale means what? Does small scale actually carry? But the word insurance is also there. The word insurance is also there. Now here's the other thing. I dug up this very nice little report that was compiled by the USAID and the University of California based upon an agri-index initiative. And it notes here that index insurance is an innovative financial tool supposedly proven to affordably protect smallholder farmers when they lose crops to drought. Traditional indemnity-based insurance, which pays out for verified losses, does not work for small-scale agriculturalists due to its high costs, meaning the premiums that you've got to pay, the financing that you've got to do regularly, meaning if you miss on a month, you don't get covered for a month. Those are the types of things that would be factored in. Now, index insurance avoids these costs by basing payouts on an index based on data from satellites. Well, that's if satellites will be incorporated here, or weather stations, or on estimates of average losses in an area, meaning everyone found in a specific area, the losses would then be based on an average that would be calculated. Now, if index-based insurance is implemented responsibly and can be effectively designed, it can have significant impacts on the target population, including reduced reliance on foreign aid.
Kukuruga na yowamba, kukuningsa ozere, nukusespika nompito domgara mokagura mkisigemeke, ramangako uwera o HIV. Ayo kukupoperan, tani kuiruga na maokoko. Tokoras gara, ninka wakuruga na yowamba. Moktura mwe hundiro lieyo wamba zuma okoko, ndi mwagwana kuma pukuro gomanzi. Tumako WhatsApp kwa numero zoe utantandatu zime, ntatwe utantane, mbali ntambali, mbali ntane. Ndi dingura kwa Facebook, kwa VMMC Namibia.
Now coming back from that short break, and let's just understand, guys, just some of these points coming from this report. And this is technically just the introduction laying out what the aim of index-based insurance could look like and what it could do to in order to assist in a targeted population. Reduced reliance on foreign aid in the case of a disaster. Preservation of assets in the case of a disaster. Avoidance of meal reduction of a coping mechanism in the case of a disaster. Increased on-farm productive investment in good years. And increased access to finance for investment for low collateral or previously high-risk borrowers. Now, here's the downside. It sounds like an innovative approach, but it must be implemented responsibly to meet its potential. The implementation of low-quality products can make farmers worse off than if there had been no intervention at all. Remember, if you but just drop the ball on one aspect of such a mechanism, you can actually cause more harm to the farmers or to the producers than what a catastrophe or a disaster can do. Now, it also damages the market for insurance. Understand this. Both now and also in the future, that's looking at the index, agri-index-based insurance, and compromising future high-quality interventions that could make a difference in the lives of farmers and the economies of target areas. Now, I'm slightly digressing, because it's for us, you, me, everyone out there, to understand this thing. You see, in the article that we had on Friday evening's Villager e-paper platform, it puts a little bit of intention on the World Bank aspect. The World Bank is visiting us. The World Bank is coming to help Namfisa and their guys set up this innovative new insurance tool to help small-scale producers through droughts, difficult or unpredictable weather patterns or, climatic scenarios and all that. Good. Great. Thumbs up. But it can cause some sort of, disturbances within the insurance market. Remember, Namfisa is a regulator. Now, these guys are coming to work with a regulator in order to help ensure that the policies are in order, that everything matches out. That the X's, that there are I's on the I's and that there are dashes on the T's and ensuring that there are full stops at the end of the sentences, they are coming here to help with that approach. I know it sounds a bit sarcastic, but technically that's why they're here. They're coming to see the regulator. The other question is, will the regulator then communicate this downstream, meaning into the rest of the Namibian agricultural economy? Because I'll point you out now that NAMFISA indicated in the report, in the article, that they've identified relevant key stakeholders. We don't know who they are. They just said they identified relevant key stakeholders. Still again, we don't know who they are. It can be Agribank. It can be the commercial banks. Because remember, the commercial banks themselves also have agri products. They also have agri products. Now, here's the other thing that we've got to look at in our discussion for tonight. And remember, guys, at no point am I saying this is a not so good idea. It is actually a good idea. But my next argument, my next piece of argument, is going to be built upon what the World Bank themselves put on their own website with regards to what they're seeing happening into the future. Remember this. First, I'm going to clear off, you know, if, how this thing can be, you know, this agri-index can work in a good idea. And then we head into what they're indicating themselves as the World Bank. Now, firstly, agri-index can work well if there is an identification on whether risk is a barrier to growth and or contributor to poverty, and to identify resources available for intervention. This first stage will help to determine the top candidate geographic regions and commodities for which this tool may be a good candidate for. So it's important to identify which geographic areas in the country and which commodities for which this tool is a great idea for. Remember, it's for small scale. So they've already identified a demographic. Small scale producers, but then who? Which areas of the country? Where? It can be someone that practices horticulture here in Windhoek. You guys know that I've interviewed that guy very well. He knows who he is. He's even got my number on speed dial. Or is it for someone that's practicing fish farming somewhere? That's also a producer. Is it only isolated to crops? Or do you actually need a lot of land in an identified crop-growing region of the country to qualify for this? Now, remember, this is still early days. We don't know because, according to NAMFISA, they've identified stakeholders. So this is going to be a long, drawn-out process to communicate. The next step is, or the next stage, sorry, these are all about stages, is assessing whether an index-based insurance product can be designed to effectively transfer risk for smallholder farmers. So, here you've got to do further analysis. And it's all, remember, this index insurance is all about minimizing the risk against the smallholder farmers by keeping the costs low. Now, in my basic understanding, coming from marketing, even from the brand conversation program that I've held, that, you know, I've been sharing much knowledge with you guys on, I've always mentioned to you, a low price is a major destabilizing factor in any market. A low price. So, my second concern My second concern to Namfisa would be, you already have stakeholders who are operating within the market sense, ensuring the market. One of those same, and all of them are, you know, they subscribe to the regulations that Namfisa is in charge of, has a mandate over. Index insurance, although it is targeted to a specific customer, so this is segmentation, market segmentation, it is targeted to a specific farmer or to specific demographic. The question would be, would it not destabilize? Because I just gave you a reason. If implemented, if not implemented properly, it could be a major destabilizing element or factor. But if it is, it can be a win-win situation. But you and I, but we all know, guys, you and I, we know Namibia is based upon a pretty precarious agricultural scenario. Because the question then becomes, we have a combination of communal land areas or communal land and privately owned farmland. Communal land, privately owned farmland. Well, the private guys, it would be a given, it would be an obvious assumption to indicate that they would have or already have some form of business cover or, business insurance applied, because a farm, ultimately, a private commercial farm, ultimately, you are advised to have some form of agricultural insurance, whether it be on your livestock or on your crop or on the equipment on the premises or on the buildings, the various production units that are associated to it, you are advised to get, insurance. And then you get the communal land, guys. How will the insurance be structured? We're not there yet. Remember, because it still has to be communicated and this still has to be laid out with the assistance of the World Bank guys. Now, my next discussion point I'm bringing in is based upon what the World Bank themselves had announced in the end of May. Now, I am moving up, not deducing. No, I can't be like Sherlock Holmes, But you now have to give those dots. I have to indicate to you those dots. The dots in the greater scheme of things. Now, the World Bank indicated themselves in their news item on their website two fascinating statements that they made. One came from in last month, in May. The other one came in April. Now, the April one indicates where the World Bank is ramping up financing to help countries in the middle of multiple crises. And the second one is where they are, where they announced planned actions for the global food crisis response, or as a, in response to the global food crisis. Now, it only points to one direction that, their visit in one form or another is aligned to the second point, their planned actions for global food crisis. It's not directly linked, but it seems to head in that direction. Now, we've got to understand, guys, there is one major crisis that the whole world is trying to get out of, the pandemic. A second crisis that is only isolated in the Europe. Well, it's two crises, actually. It's one with knock-on crises or snowball crises that they created themselves. Ultimately, I still believe Russia is not, it's not the one aching or paining about energy prices, just probably aching and paining about lost revenue. And ultimately, the energy discussion is primarily a Europe issue. It's not us, Namibia, in Africa, in SADC issue. It's a Europe issue. I'm reiterating the same sentiment that the Indian foreign minister also mentions, that by saying that, you know, if you had to look at foreign policy or the international relations realm, that Europe should stop making their issues the world's issues, but the rest of the world's issues are not their issues. It's a sentiment that I also share. Because ultimately, we have also our own crises and our own issues and our own problems. Now, what I'm getting at is actually that everyone comes out of the same pandemic crisis. Then a certain part of the world headed into an energy crisis and also a international relations crisis there in the Ukraine conflict.
Titanium, the perfect fit between platinum and silver, complementing our existing benefit options. We always offer a comprehensive healthcare experience. NHP, the premier member-centric medical aid fund. Visit NHP today at nhp.com.na. NHP, we're about you.
And then, coming back from our break, the other crises that you find within countries can be either similar, shared, or unique ones. Like, for example, Namibia. In Namibia, because of our population size, we have a unique unemployment approach, as well as also a unique economic problem in terms of that there is stagnation. We had a technical, or we were in a technical recession leading into the pandemic. The pandemic just threw us into the dustbin, technically, and the battle has always been uphill from there. Always. Now, I'm pointing back and bringing you full circle back to the World Bank's discussion points. Now, first one is the global food crisis response. Their planned actions that they were introducing. So, the World Bank indicated that $30 billion US will be made available for implementation to address food insecurity over the next 15 months. So, this is technically a stimulation. This is a stimulating exercise. If you guys don't know what stimulating means in the economic sense, is where a central bank, imagine a central bank of a country, pumps money into a market, essentially telling or effectively telling the financial institutions within that market, make loans available for something like, you know, the consistent private sector credit reports that I also highlight and dissect here on the Business Economic Zone for us, for everyone, is one such mechanism, is specifically. The other ones are usually like what Kanjenga would indicate, the instruments like government bonds and all those kinds of things that other investors or lenders will buy into in order to inject cash into an economy. Now remember, in economics, the main aim of a money is to make the money work in the economy, make it flow, allow it to move. You give people various options in terms of accessing money, whether it be through a loan or a direct credit agreement or something, you know, stuff like that, so that money just moves. And in some cases, it's also to make products move. For example, like in credit or in credit discussions, the main aim is that people take things out on credit that they can't, you know, actually buy, but through said credit agreements, money consistently flows on a regular basis, which is planned for, budgeted for, and the main aim is to get that money back into the system. And then you also see the whole, you know, supply and logistics and sub-channel management cycle also unfolding, because then you understand, oh, that's also one of the mechanisms as to why credit agreement exists in the first place. Whew. Now, right there, I know, guys, stay with me. I also have to stay with myself sometimes. The World Bank itself indicated that the actions to take as part in order to combat the global food crisis, that they identified was to provide a comprehensive global response. Now, the World Bank president, David Malpass, indicated that food price increases are having devastating effects on the poorest and most vulnerable. To inform and to stabilize markets, it is also critical that countries make clear statements now of future output increases in responses to the Ukraine conflict. Countries should make concerted efforts to increase the supply of energy and fertilizer, help farmers increase plantings and crop yields, and remove policies that block exports and imports, divert food to biofuel, or encourage unnecessary storage. For example, like storing, copious amounts of grain, rice, maize meal, or, you know, you mention it. Because in most cases, in the raw form of a staple crop is something like rice, maize, or grain. They can be stored further and shipped all across the world. So, in some cases, some countries have strategic reserves, just like oil, strategic oil reserves. There's also strategic grain or rice reserves. I know China has one, India has one. That's for the rice. I think Japan also has one. All across, anywhere else around the world, they've got grain and I think wheat reserves. Yeah, and maize reserves as well in between there. So it's essential in that sense, guys, to understand the agri-index approach. But remember, the agri-index approach is for the small-scale producer, small-scale operator. Yeah, producer is an operator. So it's to help them. They're not easily to be banked on, meaning said small-scale producer can't be financed or insured as a big-scale operator or producer. Sometimes a small-scale operator or producer does not have, intensive equipment or a need for major agricultural equipment. For example, like a full-on tractor with a plow at the end. No, sometimes it's a mechanical one operated by hand, just one person using it. So you also have to look at, you know, how it might save. But I will always mention the destabilizing aspect. Remember, the major aim here is for potentially the Namfisa and the World Bank guys to look at if this thing does not destabilize agri-insurance in the country. Because agri-insurance already exists. It already exists. And even though Namfisa is a mandated entity, or an empowered entity, or an administrator, whatever you want to call it, they have the power to regulate. The question is, who they are regulating are big operators. Even Agribank itself is a big operator. Even DBN itself is a big operator. They are big operators. They are big financial institutions in our market, in our financial market. And the main aim is for them, they will always highlight whether or not that discussion point comes out. They will highlight their concerns because they have clients to look after. They have clients who themselves have taken products from them in order to ensure that they do not get a shortened, they don't get the bad end in these discussions. Now, ultimately, the World Bank also notes here that they're also working with countries on a preparation of a $12 billion worth of projects, new projects, for the next 15 months to respond to food security crises. Now, these projects, supposedly by the World Bank, are expected to support agriculture, social protection to cushion the effects of higher food prices, and water and irrigation projects, with the majority of resources going to Africa and the Middle East, Eastern Europe, and Central Asia, as well as also South Asia. Well, I'll tell you now, Eastern Europe is out of that because the biggest producer in Eastern Europe was Ukraine. So who? It's not for us to worry about. It's just a question that we need to ask. Who? Because the way you and I understood it is that Ukraine supplied most of North Africa and the other Mediterranean countries with their grain, their cooking oil, and other agricultural products. Now, ultimately, that leads us into our other discussion point, which the World Bank announced back in April, the other one, that they were ramping up financing to help countries amid multiple crises. Now, the World Bank then announced that it was going to be discussing. Sorry, guys. My English, for some reason, is just abandoning me through the course of this day. It'll be discussing with its governors and its board of executive directors a 15-month crisis response package or finance package of around $170 billion to help countries address multiple overlapping crises. As I told you guys, everyone is coming out of the pandemic. Everyone or some countries are more acutely affected or impacted by the Ukraine crisis. Others are not as acute, but are feeling some sort of knock-on effects. Others have been acutely impacted by other factors, for example, like continued pandemic exposure or rates of infection taking place in certain parts of the continent. And, you know, we used to do business with those countries, but we can't anymore because people can't move or goods can't move. And then on top of that, also in the continent of our big beloved continent of Africa, we also have the issue of various security issues or just governance issues. For example, the various military juntas and coup d'etats that have taken place there in the Sahel region. So that's another issue. That's also a crisis. Remember, that's a crisis. Sudan is still in its crisis. So all of that is being factored in. Now, of this, the World Bank noted that it is also working to provide an initial crisis response of around $50 billion by the end of this month. This response also includes analytical work and policy advice at a country, regional, and global level to inform well-targeted crisis and medium-term interventions. Now, Malpass, once again, the World Bank president, said that developing countries are facing multiple overlapping crises, including the pandemic, rising inflation, Russia's invasion of Ukraine, large macroeconomic imbalances, and energy and food supply shortages. Now, we don't actually have an energy shortage. We also probably also don't have a food shortage. As I told you, there are certain knock-on effects that we are experiencing, but we're also not experiencing. But in terms of diminishing purchasing power, that is what we are experiencing, which factors into the rising inflation discussion. We are experiencing that. You, me, whoever, we are experiencing that. We still have the knock-on impacts coming from the pandemic itself. Now, that's another thing as well that we've got to factor in. The pandemic is still impacting us one or other way. Now, Malpass notes here that these are causing massive reversals in poverty reduction, education, health, and gender equality. And also that his group, the World Bank Group, will respond to these crises with impact, speed, and scale. Yeah, that's there. He's making words there. He's making sounds there. It's a question of, you know, how does it happen on the ground? How does it translate through to us? Now, what was identified in this discussion point, the second one, is that a crisis roadmap was also unveiled by the World Bank, which will outline the initial fast-tracking response period and possible steps. Now, this will also be followed by a more detailed proposal to be presented at the World Bank's board of executives, also at by the end of June. Now, we will most probably only hear about this in July, what these steps are, what this roadmap includes, and, you know, all that, and how everything will be streamlined. Now, they noted that the Ukraine crisis is provoking a rapidly expanding global crisis. For sure, it is. We are now seeing it going crazy in Sri Lanka, especially in Sri Lanka, and certain, and especially in Lebanon. Yeah, Lebanon. And I'd say a few other countries in North Africa. Few other countries. But we've got to understand also that the World Bank notes here that with economic, that these global crises or these expanding crises is reflecting all.
Paratus Mobile LTE. Everything you want, whenever you want it. Start uploading, downloading, liking, and sharing all your experiences with the world. Starting from 100 Namibian dollars per month, including VAT for prepaid, or 345 Namibian dollars per month, excluding VAT for postpaid. Get online with high-speed internet the way you want it. Visit na.paratus.africa for more information.
Now, getting back and just where I ended off, in terms of these crises that the World Bank indicated, they are materializing in the economic and social impacts that are spreading through commodity markets specifically. I gave you the example just last week of what happened to the nickel exchange or the nickel platform exchange at the London Metals Exchange, where there's a company that lost out on potential trading. Because as the Ukraine crisis broke out, as the conflict broke out, the London Metals Exchange had suspended trading for nickel, the metal nickel, for a whole 2 weeks, because they saw the price of nickel shoot through the ceiling, and, you know, people might be benefiting unjustly. Well, you can't say unjustly. Because it was also identified in the same space that nickel, or the world's largest nickel producer, is Russia. The world's largest nickel producer is Russia. And what happened? And this also brings us full circle back to where I said, where somehow we get shot through the foot with these sanctions that are coming from the NATO bloc guys, who are deciding that we must all jump into the same boat and support their initiative in sanctioning. But they are causing major destabilizing factors in the global economic space. The US cannot supply everyone with oil, but the US is not allowing Venezuela to supply oil. They're not. Now, in this regard, by stimulating, it does not actually mean that any alleviation could be perhaps, you know, materialized. Because you'd just be throwing money at the problem. You'll just be throwing money. Although in our sense, we're coming from a climate discussion point, because potentially an agri-index has to do with if there is a shortfall in rainfall. If there is a protracted drought scenario, if there is a devastation that was caused in the crop market by a specific pest, for sure, that would make protection of small scale producers essential, because those small scale producers could ultimately either be subsistence producers, or they could try and transform themselves into one or other kind of commercial producer. And that they need to be ring-fenced. They need to be insulated in some way that under conventional insurance approach or agri-insurance approach, They would not be ring-fenced. They would not be insulated. They would not be protected. Right? Now, this is good. But it still does not speak to the overall economic scenario, to the overall economic impact. It doesn't. We are going to have, and I'm going to stress this, guys, we are going to have legacy issues from the COVID pandemic. We are going to have legacy issues. What do I mean by legacy issue? That we will be carrying issues, unresolved problems or niggles. I'll say niggle because issue is a little bit lighthearted and pretty vague, but a niggle can be that, you know, uncomfortable, but rather you can ignore it for short stints of time, meaning you can ignore it for like 5 months and then it pops up again and we talk about it and people make noise about it and then another 5 months it dies down, it's silence again and then it pops up, you know, shows its little ugly face, you know, down the line 5 months later and then we talk about it again and ask, you know, why was nothing done? And then so it continues on for like the next 10 years. And I'll still stress this. We will have legacy issues. We will carry these legacy issues or legacy niggles from the COVID pandemic into the future to be inherited by the leaders of tomorrow, which could be you, me, anyone else that would have to sit with some of these issues going into tomorrow, because that's what the COVID pandemic exposed in modern day human societies and systems. It exposed it. Remember, in the COVID pandemic, certain businesses could not make money, but they were expected to spend money that they could not recuperate. Now, what did that do? It created vacuums. It created vacuums. If you want to speak in a sense of like in physics or astrophysics or, you know, science, it created black holes. What does a black hole do? Black hole sucks out or sucks in any positive energy. It sucks in positive energy. Now, that's what the COVID pandemic did. Imagine it as this major science fiction movie and the space crew are facing this major black hole which is just sucking in all the positive energy from space. Now, that's how you can imagine the COVID pandemic, because it's that kind of road marker for a whole 2020. In everyone's history. But from there on, everybody has been operating with a handicap. Handicap meaning we were maimed in some form. You can't walk straight. You can't function properly. Everyone has been operating with a handicap. And then Russia decides to do what Russia always does. Act like Russia. Be Russia. Do like Russia does. So that impacts everyone else. But ultimately, the major crisis that comes out of this is the prolonged impacts and effects that we're going to have stemming from 2020. Now, the World Bank, them, are trying to, you know, throw their money somewhere, you know, to plug a gap. Because this is someone plugging a gap in a major dam wall that is cracking all over the place. It's cracking all over the place. You also have to factor in that the global climate discussion is rapidly changing. Rapidly, guys. I'm saying rapidly. Because it won't be long. Remember, there can be a man-induced catastrophe, like what a war does. And then you can get a natural occurring catastrophe every year. Because we still have to understand, and the science, because it's not a complete science, it's also not, you know, a very, very, very replicable, you can't replicate the science, meaning weather, meteorology. It's a science, yes, it's a science, but You can't replicate it because we as humanity, we cannot control the weather. We can't. If we did, there would be no droughts, right? Or we would have been creating more droughts than possible. But initially, the entire global discussion is still taking place. Now, most of this response by the World Bank points towards them, the direct one on the ground, them assisting Namfisa, sounds to finding ways of insulating, protecting, ring-fencing small-scale producers from either severe climatic changes. I say severe because it is impacting us severely. And then ultimately, if you blow it up, you know, and you try to look at it at a big scale, on a larger scale, it's trying to assist in any kind of, you know, scenario where you've got multiple crises within a country, within a sovereign entity, or in a sovereign state. Now, it's a major balancing act. I say again, it's a major balancing act. Because they indicated even here, although it's about, you know, trying to balance out and combat the surging costs of food, fuel, fertilizer. Because remember, there is a major fertilizer demand that Ali Dangote, the guy from Nigeria, had indicated just in last month or end of April, where he said technically that people are begging him for his fertilizer based on, because he's also in the fertilizer business. And guess where these people are from? It's the North Africans. It's the East Africans who used to buy fertilizer from where? Ukraine and Russia. And who banned Ukraine and Russia? Well, technically, Russia was sanctioned. Ukraine technically was impacted or handicapped by Russia. So that's another thing. Who is benefiting? Who is being benefited how by these ongoing discussion points? Now, on top of that also is the pandemic and the fragility that is now found in many countries because of the climate, the impacts of climate change. And the already severe poverty, inequality, and other developmental setbacks that exist in much of the developing world as well. And also, oh my guys, there's so many add-ons to add on. Now, from all that, this is what the World Bank has identified. So, for us on the ground, firstly, I am applauding such initiatives, you know, agri-index insurance, for sure. But secondly, this should have technically been something that should have been a lot earlier. This should have also been something that should have happened, you know, somewhere in early 2021? Although at that stage, the World Bank was also looking at facilitating various sovereign loans coming, you know, that most countries had initiated or had submitted to them. So we've also got to understand, you know, everything has to be done in a process. Procedures have to be followed. So for sure, I'll give them that. But nonetheless, guys, this brings us up to the end, or close to the end, of today's discussion here of the Business and Economic Zone. Do stay tuned as the Matriarch is in close proximity. I say close proximity because I can see her. She's not standing right next to me. But nonetheless, do stay tuned for the rest of your Monday evening programming. Also, you can find me again tomorrow, same time, same place, the only number one talk radio station of Eagle FM. Now, just understand as well, guys, that with regards to our discussions here on the Business and Economic Zone, I will also be kicking it up a little bit of a notch because I started last week with the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, the OECD, with their discussion based upon the urbanizations or the rate of urbanization. From there on, I'll also be incorporating some of these discussion points coming from these international bodies because ultimately, they are providing some of the discussion points for us here on the ground. And it's good if we factor that in because we've got to get or understand what's happening out there to see how it is impacting and being funneled or does it materialize to us down here. We've got to know, guys. We've got to know. Because, and I'm still going to pull back to that Davos update that the president and the three cabinet ministers and the vice president also gave last week. We are now on the map somewhere. Namibia is now being seen somewhere. So it is only prudent for me, for us here at Eagle FM, to bring you these discussion points of what's happening there internationally, where our name is being mentioned. Nah. Like we used to say there in, you know, when you were a kid, when someone mentioned your name. Yeah, I heard Dwight. What did Dwight say? Your first reaction would be, what did Dwight say? Well, I've got the Maitrak now in here in studio. She's right here. Also giving her 5 cents. Technically, we don't have 5 cents anymore. It's now we must upscale to 10 cents.
Yeah.
Ne?
Please give me my 5 cents. Meow, my 5 cents. My things fell out of my bag.
Okay, that's the first thing she's complaining about.
And right? I'm not happy about that.
Well, on that note, let's head into our ad break. And I'm signing out.
Yeah.
So, jy het dit gedoen. Jy het jou laat besny.
Yep.
Dit was baie dapper. Was dit nie vrek seer nie?
Dit was net so effen seer, maar dis die moeite werd om myself teen seksueel oordraagbare infeksies te beskerm. En dis soveel makliker om skoon te hou.
Wel, as jy dit so stel, dan moet ek dit dalk ook laat doen.
Bra, dis die regte ding om te doen. Man up, kry 'n besnyding. Om 'n gratis besnyding te bespreek of om meer uit te vind, stuur 'n WhatsApp boodskap na 081-309-2729 of besoek ons Facebookblad by VMMC Namibia.
The first free-range eggs produced and packaged in Ondangwa, Walenga Eggs, are now available in 6s and 18s. These fresh free-range eggs are produced daily and have a shell life of over 28 days. Now listen up. Free-range eggs are the most nutritious and organic eggs available for human consumption. Mmm, just yummy. We at Walenga Eggs also want to give every Namibian an opportunity to own a share in our value chain. So if you want to sell or distribute Walenga Eggs, call Omalaiti Foods at 0811-27-3622 or 0811-660707. This is a fest for Namibia. Walenga Eggs, the Great White.